The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight, where we will analyze the manifesto of the shooter, a black shooter, so not many victims, two may be dead, but even the deaths have not been confirmed. Typical of black shooters, they don't know how to aim, and it leads to very few victims. But we'll see, because this guy was an internet guy who was preparing for this for a long time and who killed himself at the end of the shooting. And we'll see how a murderous black man feels at the end of life. He was kind of a groiper, incel. He plays on many teams, black Israelite, perhaps, very aware, very red-pilled on the Jewish question. So an interesting character that we will look into today. Shrugmamel sends a super chat. He says, do you believe that my Filipina ex was lying to me to get a response? I'm now under the impression that's what she was attempting, to which I didn't respond. So he's referring to his Filipina ex claiming that she was pregnant from him, but based on pictures, she doesn't look pregnant months later. Look, a Filipino's words, a Filipino's woman's words are worth absolutely zero. So it's like, is she pregnant? I don't know, flip a coin. Flip a coin, because if she says she is pregnant, you have to gather some other evidence, basically, because you can't trust the Filipino woman, especially if you're an outsider coming in and they engage in the trade of prostitution and sex, and they do so very intentionally. They have a strategy to get in the U.S., so you're being used, of course. Of course, that's the deal. At some point, you kind of accept, I'm being used, but I'm going to do the trade still because it gives me a baby. Philip a coin, says Barnaby Bruto. I wouldn't assume that what she said was true. It could have been manipulation, but it could also happen to be true. I mean, you need to gather some other evidence, a positive pregnancy test that you can witness her doing. And then there's the question, even if she was pregnant, is she pregnant with your child? Because that's another thing. She could be, you have to calculate the window of time in which you could ensure that you were the inseminator. Because she can go get inseminated 1 month later, and then it's not your child, and then you're making all this immigration sacrifice for her, and it's not your child. So be very careful. If there's something that doesn't seem to fit in the story where, okay, she's pregnant, but she's 3 months pregnant, and you would expect her to be 6 months pregnant, you're being scammed very solid. End of the line, Joel says, JF, for future show segment, you might wish to review the Wes Watson gym fight footage. I saw this footage. I'm not interested. It's not interesting. I think I know what you're referring to. There's a gym bro narrating the whole thing. And so then I did that, and then he did that, and notice how I did that, and he did that. with his muscles. I don't even understand what's going on. I don't understand why we should be interested in this. Frog Eyes says there was a Filipino woman on 90 Day Fiancé. When the guy went to go visit her in the Philippines, her father literally slept with the pigs in their pig pen. Okay. Okay. So yes, this shooter, high school shooter, who calls himself a doctor, but I don't think he has a doctorate. He was 17 years old. In his manifesto, he calls himself a doctor. Maybe an honorific doctorate for being black, maybe. Maybe they give those out these days. Pretty boy, sex haver, it was this guy. And he writes a manifesto that is very... okay, he was a doctor like Dr. Dre. Okay, so that kind of doctor, I see. So he was a student very much connected to the internet, referring to Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes. So I cannot show you the manifesto because it is filled with the N-word, with the hard har everywhere. But he's a black guy. He's a black guy who has been raised by parents that are black Israelites. So the black Israelites are those black people who believe that they are the legitimate Jews to whom Israel belongs. So that we was Jews, basically, is the black Israelites' position, that they are some of the people referred to in the Bible as legitimately owning Israel. So this guy has parents that are black Israelites. At 17 years old, he is tired of life. He considers himself a minor, less than 5 out of 10, so a man of no interest. He describes people passing and not caring about him. No one cared about him. He was nothing. He felt like nothing. And on top of it, he felt like his race was a... Well, he has some kind of black pride. But he has a kind of vision of blacks were once great. So we was kings, literally. Blacks were once great, but the blacks of today are products of a farm plantation, basically, run by the Jews. So, you know, he's not so wrong, you know, in his analysis. And he's very intelligent, let me tell you. He's probably at the high end of what a black teenager can be because he writes a text that flows very well. Not many mistakes in that text. There are weird phrasings and rough phrasings, but overall, for a 17-year-old to write a text like this, I would say maybe he's 110 IQ. Okay? So he's a black 110 IQ who says, the black people of today, they disgust me. Because they were farmed by the Jews through rap culture and through all sorts of cultural tricks and dissemination. And we became something that is that I don't like. This is a statement. And so he has the disdain for his race in its current state, although he dreams of a potential black people that could have been left to its own and that would have been great that way. He believes in the destabilization of society. He calls all of the school shooters and the shooters who have, you know, Brendan Tarrant, the big shooters who have killed a lot of people. He names them saints. So he considers them in some kind of eschatological religious way that they are sanctified. So he follows very much their manifesto, reads all about it, and his manifesto is highly inspired from many of those manifestos. I think perhaps the closest, the Tyrant manifesto, because he details all of how do you get guns, how do you get this, how do you build your tactics and stuff. So it's this new trend of shooters who don't just want to commit a shooting, but who want to encourage others to commit shootings. And they provide tips and information. He attempted to live stream the shooting, and I got a part of the live stream. I don't know what happened with the rest. Was there a camera problem? Did it stop at some point? Or was it cut out by censorship? I don't know. But we really don't get the moment of the action. Impressively, in the bout that is filmed, as he walks out of the bathroom, because he took a couple of pictures, tweeted a couple of pictures of him in the bathroom preparing his gun and stuff. As he walks, he was probably around many students in a way that he could have made much more than two victims if he started the shooting right there in the hall rather than go in the cafeteria. Because he went to the cafeteria and somehow things didn't go the way he was planning, because he was only really able to shoot two people, you know, correctly. That there may be more injured, but in terms of people who could be dead, that's two. Rodilacid says, exactly, JF. He does seem high enough IQ to just realize, like, why is it whenever blacks move into a neighborhood, the trend always goes downward? Why is it black culture is dysgenic and probably wishes other blacks could also strive to be more? Imagine you are the only person like this with self-awareness. Yes, I think it's a case of a guy who was intelligent enough to see that his parents were mistreating him. But it wasn't like massive mistreatment, like kidnapping him or raping him. It was more like his parents were following their emotions and being unjust to him and dumping on him responsibilities and telling it's your fault and blah, blah, blah. And he felt like, hey, this world is not just. This world is unfair. And my parents are complaining to me, but they are doing so on an arbitrary basis based on how they feel that day. So when you are in that kind of environment as a child, this is why it's so important for parents to always be fair, objective, and truthful to children. Because you have the absolute authority. What you decide will be the case. But if you decide wrong in a way that your child knows in his heart that you are wrong, this creates a man who accumulates a view of injustice. And he's like, he doesn't like his race for this. Because he keeps being in trouble. He is born around Los Angeles, but then moved to Tennessee. But he says he had trouble early in Los Angeles with gangs, fighting, him being beaten up by black people and then by Hispanics. So he didn't like the racial diversity of America that he was exposed to because it led to problems in his life. Other than this, I wouldn't say that there's a deep analysis of culture other than underlining the important disbalance of power that the Jews have over cultural matters and how ultimately he wanted to liberate the white man from the Jews. That was his view. His view was, it doesn't matter if I'm not white. His view was, if I can do something to help the white man, I should. And so he wanted the white man to be freed, basically, from what he perceived as the oppression of the non-Aryan races. That is a summary of what was written in his manifesto. There's also some cultural references. He says the most influence he had, although he does list Nick Fuentes in this list, but he says Candace Owens is the one that most awakened him on the matters that he was worried about. And ultimately, what he was interested in is causing chaos where people live. So he was interested in not just being at the border of society complaining about the problems. He was interested at destabilizing the system from the inside into places where people consider themselves safe. And so that's why he did the shooting in this high school. He was aware that the shooting in the end would be relatively small and wouldn't have much impact on the world. But in his view, there would be a revolution if enough people did like him, basically. If enough people wanted the world to be unstable and destabilize it, they would. Lendolt Guntram says, Ave Caesar, those to be oppressed, salute you, lol. Okay. He was calling himself at times the last true Rhodesian, which I don't know. A last true Rhodesian, would that be a white person in Rhodesia? I don't know what that means. He refers to lots of internet memes. He refers to the total death of his people, which is an internet meme in and of itself. He refers to his own death as a total N-word death. He refers to him having the intent of shooting himself in the cranium as a total N-word death. And so to him, it was an item of suffering in his life, the idea of being black. But at the same time, he had this idealistic vision of what the black race could have been. Interesting situation. That is pretty much all. And he had planned and had trained, and he was recommending that shooters that want to do this, that they stop being stupid and, you know, talk to feds or try to coordinate with someone on Discord. He says everyone is a fed. Anyone who approaches you to that says, hey, it's time we take some action, that's a fed. And so he was quite clever in terms of detecting the honeypots and the fed operations. I wouldn't be surprised, given how much he knows about this, I wouldn't be surprised that he had some interactions with the Fed, and that, you know, the classic sentence from the FBI, he was on our radar. He must have been on their radar, having, even if your internet presence is private, even if you just note stuff on a notepad, there are some of this can leak. Some of this can be accessed. It depends on just how hard you are at hiding them. So yes, that is the situation. Perhaps ironically, he calls himself the pretty boy with a V, pretty boy sex haver. But in his manifesto, he reveals that he was not getting sex. In fact, he was considering himself two types of inceldom. He was an incel because he was a -5 out of 10. So people didn't care about him. People didn't pay attention to him. He wasn't interesting to females. But he also describes himself as a N-word cell, which he defines as an involuntary black man. he was forced against his consent to be born in a black body, and he didn't consent to this. He didn't want any of this. Lendolt Guntram says, nowadays that classic Fed sentence is quite problematic. Why? Because technically everyone is on their radar, massive spy servers and stuff. So, yes. Yeah, it's true to an extent. Everyone is on the radar of the feds. Attaway says he was likely trying to date outside of his race. It's possible. Possible that he encountered the ultimate blockade of, oh, yeah, we're going to be kind to you and we're gonna act like you are our friend, but you are ultimately friend-zoned. That is something that awaits many black men. Many black men, you know, are being cuddled into a society that displays acceptance. But when things come to shove, at the dating market level, racial preferences still exist. So we have a highly hypocritical society, and I think he was very annoyed by the hypocrisy of society. He was saying that the media are gaslighting us, they are gaslighting white people, that his parents were gaslighting him. So he felt like we were in a world of bullshit. And that's the world he wanted to destroy. So that's the story of how he came to shoot today. And perhaps there are two kids in the high school who may have been victim. We don't have the confirmation of their death, but they were transported by ambulance. there was this speech, this bizarre speech yesterday, and I quickly commented on it yesterday. But when I think about it today, it's very weird. This Oracle guy who comes with this Chinese guy, Sun something. His name is Sun, S-O-N. And they are announcing a $500 billion investment in AI in the US. That I guess that the number that they gave allowed Trump to be interested in being part of a press conference with them, since it's such a big investment. But at the same time, the $500 billion is largely bullshit. It was a $100 billion investment from the start, and they made it look like it's $500 billion for the papers to report that, but the reality is there's no commitment at all onto the $500 billion. It's $100 billion, and then we have a plan that we will eventually get to $500 billion. So they don't have to follow this plan. Masayoshi Son, Korean Japanese tech investor. Thank you for Lendl Guntram for the documentation. It supplements the show very well when you do this. So they are not prime players of the AI world. They are players of, I would say, the computer infrastructure world. And the problem is a lot of these investments that are now themed around AI are really just the continuation of the growth of a sort of monopoly installing itself over server hardware and large-scale computer infrastructure, which is said to be for AI. I find this kind of weird. And, you know, like an Elon Musk is actually developing work with XAI to improve an AI. And we can say that when Elon Musk built XAI and bought all of these servers, he was actually building an infrastructure for AI. These guys, of course, Sam Altman was there. And Sam Altman indeed has a history with AI, but these guys, they're really interested at selling and gatekeeping computer processing power and electricity. That's what they do. And that's a different game. Now, of course, it's necessary for AI, but it's a little bit like Kevin O'Leary and what he wanted to do with Alberta and the natural gas. It's like, okay, you don't really do AI. You want to sell computer as a service, computing power as a service, including electricity, to a bunch of people. Stephen Robinson says, breaking, Vladimir Putin is reportedly seeking to have Anthony Fauci extradited to Russia to face COVID-era crimes against humanity charges as part of a deal to end the war in Ukraine. If that is true, if that is big if true, big if true, I don't think that's true, bro. I think you must have trusted some very bad news source, because that would be based as fuck, but too based to be real. Too based to be real. I don't see it happening. You're not going to have Trump betray an American citizen. Although, you know, when you think about how the presidential pardon is being abused, that would be a workaround. Eventually, you could think that something like this could happen, but probably not with Trump. But in a very, very late stage America, you know, where political war is all there is, maybe you'd have a side deciding. We're sending those that you pardon for sending them to another country so that they can get justice. But when you think about it, it's what's been happening inside the U.S. All of these state cases that have been pulled against Trump were aiming to prosecute Trump in a way that he couldn't pardon himself. They were aiming to be non-federal in nature. And so you had these states that were deciding, all right, we can give him trouble in a way that he can't pardon himself. So yes, on this AI question, very bizarre when you think about it. Very bizarre guy, this Oracle guy. Like, he looks like some redhead from an infomercial or something that tells you something super creepy. And Elon Musk has been criticizing them by saying they don't have the money. And I would tend to believe Elon Musk because they haven't committed for that money. So it's like, oh yeah, we have plans to invest up to $500 billion. Well, okay, I have planned to invest $1 trillion on my show right now. I have plans to invest $1 trillion on getting a better camera. Would you please feature me, Trump, in a press conference? We have learned that Amazon is terminating its operations in Quebec, Canada, after workers at one of its warehouses in Laval unionized. Another L for Canada. I'm so happy for this. Quebec is a falling society. I've had to abandon it due to political persecution, and I hope that Quebec goes to shit, and perhaps the first stage is outside companies starting to realize we can't make money in this shithole. Let's all leave. Amazon is leaving because these employees, of course, were at risk of demanding better pay, and it's good that they get punished. It's good. Whatever bad can happen to Quebec, I saw the prime minister. The prime minister was, you know, François Legault was asked, what do you think about Amazon leaving Quebec? And he said, I haven't had my orange juice this morning. And he's there with his big belly. I haven't had my orange juice this morning. And he says something else that's irrelevant. And it's like, okay, you don't even care. I hope that your country goes to shit. I hope that the entirety of Quebec becomes super poor. Attaway says all of Eastern Canada is communist. Absolutely. I was thinking that getting out of Quebec and going to a little island would be safe, but no, even there, the communists were after me. So the only free place left is the middle of Canada and the middle of America. Rodilacid says, I think 1,700 jobs lost in Canada. New guy says, Canada's ruling class are morons. Oh yeah, François Legault was saying that the Montreal Canadiens won. So it's like, okay, you care about the wins of your hockey team rather than the sustainability of your employment market? Go to shit, Quebec. Go to shit. Become the mud that you deserve to be. You know, Pierre Falardeau, one of his last movies before he died, it ends with Elvis Graton, the Quebecois impersonator of Elvis Presley, just on the street, but with shit. The shit is coming out of the sewer in Quebec, and it's going to the neck of Elvis Graton, even if he's outside. So there's shit coming out of the sewer so high that it's covering his entire body in shit. And I think that Pierre Falardeau was absolutely right. Quebec, the fate of Quebec is to be just flooded under its own shit. When your government stops working, when it turns against its own people, that's what awaits you. End of the line, Joel says, Boston Dynamics robot will replace the type of work that current Amazon warehouse workers do. Yes. Yes, I think that Amazon basically is distribution roboticized already. the only place where there are still humans are the place where they haven't yet quite found a function for a robot, but it's a matter of time before they develop it, because they have all these little cases, little boxes. Amazon is attaching all this stuff, little boxes for every item, and really, they could have and they do have robots that just slide and go get the boxes. But sometimes they need humans just to get into the box, select one item and put it in the box. That's replaceable by a robot very soon. Blanket says, maybe JF should come to Florida or Texas. I'm not coming to Texas. I consider that Texas has been taken over also. So not a safe place. Doubting Thomas says, JF, it was disappointing to find out when you said you were at the North Pole, you were not indeed in Nunavut. No, but I'd like to visit. Now that I'm placed right here, I am in a very good position that I can drive to the most northern place of North America. I would like to go visit the Arctic. And I think that would be a nice... I would certainly take pictures and share them on my Twitter. That would be absolutely awesome. It was so intense. The Baron Trump comment to Joe Biden and the face of Joe Biden after, it's like, wow. Joe Biden is smiling. Baron Trump comes and says something very impolitely, nose to nose, breathing into his mouth. And look at the... So people are theorizing... people are theorizing. What could he have said that made Joe Biden become so distraught? And one of my favorite hypotheses is he said, you forgot to pardon yourself, bro. That would be a good one. That would be a good one. I don't know what he said, but Baron Trump is continuing to accumulate this super aura. He hasn't done much in life. He hasn't done much, but somehow he is building sympathy with the public. People love him. And when you have a moment like this, that creates a character, a mythology. And I believe we are building a mythology around Baron Trump. I think there's a great future for him ahead. People were saying yesterday that he's planning to undertake some real estate, luxury real estate project where, you know, they build big buildings and they sell parts of it and floors of it. That's interesting. Shring Mamel says, what are your thoughts on Prime Minister Jacques Parizeau? But Jacques Parizeau was the prime minister at the moment of the vote, the referendum for the independence of Quebec in 1995. The referendum ended up at 49.4% yes. So it was missing 0.6% to win the independence of Quebec. I was very much for the independence of Quebec then. Then I've lost respect for Quebec society because they persecuted me and my family. And they have persecuted, in general, families and fathers. It's a fucking female hellhole down there. So, I mean, at this point, I am still... I guess I'm back to... Yes, I want Quebec to be independent because I want them to go away. I want this society to be isolated so that something can survive in North America that doesn't go full female. Yeah, so what I think about Jacques Parizeau, I think he's a great guy. He did his, he tried. I think he wanted Quebec to be independent. And of course, he is recognized in Quebec history and reviled and hated for saying at the outset of the vote, even if his counselors were telling him, don't say this, people are going to hate you forever. And he said, I need to say it. And he went to the mic and he And he said, we lost because of ethnic vote and money. And by ethnic vote, he meant migrants. He meant English people coming into Quebec to prop up the vote. And by money, he meant the illegal interference of the federal government getting involved in this provincial vote and by funding its own demonstrations of love and protest and blah, blah, blah. So that's what he meant by ethnic vote and money. And it was kind of a, as a young man, this may have been a first political mainstream figure that went race realism, basically, because when you say ethnic vote, you're saying there's a bunch of people that are not white and they just decided the fate of the Quebec nation. So it was very important to me, a very formative moment, because as a young man, there wasn't much cultural sources that would be honest about immigration and about ethnicity and race. So here, that was a first sign by the system that, oh, there are people inside who believe in some sort of race realism, but they can't talk about it, and they're told not to talk about it. Shamrock Shake says, yep, I can't believe people still say things like, we need to stop the abusive patriarchy. Oh yeah, the patriarchy is not there anymore. The patriarchy has been raped into the ground. Raised Fist says, Government of Canada paid plane tickets to Canadians so they can travel to Quebec to tell us they love us after shitting on us for decades. Yeah, yeah. Shrink Mamel sends a super chat. Oh no, this one is the one I was answering. Bishop Buddy, this woman. Unbelievable, this woman who used the moment of prayer with Trump and J.D. Vance. And she started saying stuff like, so she's a Protestant bishop. Somehow I didn't know there was such a thing as Protestant female preachers. Apparently there is. Given that she had a whole robe and stuff, I had assumed that she was a Catholic or something. But no, she's a English Protestant tradition bishop. She started saying, I want to pray for, there are currently people who are afraid. There are people who may not have all of the papers, but they are afraid. There are people who may not feel male or female, and they're afraid. And this is such leftist crap. This whole I'm afraid. It's this whole culture of fake abuse, of everyone is an abuse victim, even if the abuse hasn't occurred. And it's like, well, if they don't have their paper, they should be afraid. If I had committed a crime, if I had done something illegal, I would be afraid. Would you care about me being afraid, or would you care about the victims of my illegal act? You should care about the victims of my illegal act. You shouldn't be like, oh, poor JF, he's afraid. No, if I commit a crime, it would be normal for me to be afraid. And this is an ordered society, a society of law and order. And so she was talking straight into Trump's face, using a religious moment to basically push a leftist mentality of fake abuse and of inexistent reasons to care, because we shouldn't care about if someone has violated the law and they're afraid, it's because the law is efficient. If they were not afraid, I would be worried.
I appreciate your time and your tone there, so serious and genuine. You see him, he's stone-faced, he then looks down, but he's listening to every word you say as you made that personal plea to him. What were you looking at him in that moment? What kind of response were you perhaps hoping for in that moment?
I was I was looking at the president because I was speaking directly to him. I was also, frankly, as you do in every sermon, speaking to everyone who was listening through that one-on-one conversation with the president, reminding us all that in the people that are frightened in our country, the two groups of people that I mentioned are our fellow human beings, and that they have been portrayed in all throughout the political campaign in the harshest of lights, that I wanted to counter as gently as I could with a reminder of their humanity and their place in our wider community. And I was speaking to the president because I felt that he has this moment now where he feels charged and empowered to do what he feels called to do. And
yeah, this was not a gentle and subtle way to do it. It was absolutely invasive, which is why people right now, and I would agree, people are calling on Twitter for the abolition of any form of female preaching. If you're a female, you can either become a wife or an OnlyFans model, but no preaching. A fork in the road of human civilization, Trump caps political comeback, fulfills day one promises. People are celebrating the advancement of Trump through his promises. I think there's kind of a slowdown now. Today, we've heard that there was 308 illegal migrants that were captured by ICE. That was on the second day of Trump presidency. I believe that most of these were migrants against whom there were criminal accusations or that were found already guilty of a crime. And one person reported losing their nanny to their Hispanic nanny to to this raid. But we're still talking about a very small number. It's a very small number. But yeah, it's people who are paid cash at this kind of jobs. Oh, do you want to be my nanny? There's something disgusting about these white liberals that are paying cash for these Hispanic migrants. And it's like, you are extorting a low wage person who cannot do anything else than serve you. So of course you couldn't afford a nanny if you were to employ them through the regular route, but you can afford a nanny because you pay her cash and she has no choice but to work for a low salary. Then Donald Guntram says, yeah, she got brutally excoriated on X and Truth Social too, even by Trump himself. Absolutely. Attack Manlet sends $25. Thank you so much, by the way, for the big support. If you'd like to support the show, do like Attack Manlet and use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. He says, no questions or hot takes. I'm just wishing you and your loved ones never before seen levels of happiness, prosperity, and personal freedom in this new year till forevermore, Jean-François. Salut, monsieur. But I'll tell you what, I am super happy. I'm super happy. Things are going well in life, well in personal life. I am entering the part of my life where I engage in post-exponential reproduction. I have reached exponentiality. And by exponentiality, I mean that I have much, much more descent in the next generation than myself as an individual in my generation. Exponential, not two, not three, many. And I'm like, I'm getting into that post-exponential moment where the exponent slowly converts into an hyperbole. And let me tell you, that this Genghis Khan Goldilocks zone is fun. It's fun to be in because you don't have the stress. You don't have the stress. I can finally inseminate with peace of mind. Peace of mind that even if it doesn't work, even if it doesn't work, you know, it would still be okay. Blanket says, Jeff, I'm wondering, have you ever thought of Odyssey joined memberships, giving us another way to support you on Odyssey? Yeah, but early, it wasn't available to me because for Canadian accounts, you couldn't because they were tied to Stripe. But I guess that now they're changing their system. So on February 2nd, there won't be any more Stripe Super Chat. Now, I'm kind of nervous. What does that mean for me? there will be Arweave Super Chat. I hope that it's easy. I hope that it's easy for people to say, I'm getting the credit card in and I'm sending some Arweave to JF. Hopefully, they will design a beautiful system that perhaps it could be even easier than Stripe. That's what I would wish. but you're going to have the Arweave extension, probably R-Connect. You're going to have an Arweave wallet. And that's the way the Super Chats will work on Odyssey. Now, we don't know because they haven't revealed yet their work. But on February 2nd, they are planning to discontinue the old system. And so memberships will not work anymore. Maybe there will be memberships in the new form with Arweave. And if they do offer it, yes, I will offer that option. But if you want to support me on a monthly basis, join the Patreon, the Subscribestar, or the X account. And you're going to get exclusive material on top of it. For example, the story of my flight from the Eastern Provinces with the full details, without jokes and without comedic performance. A 1 hour telling of my full story is available right now to my ex subscribers. You know, the things that are that are very disappointing with the Trump entry. He frees all foreign aid, and you're like, oh, good. He freezes all foreign aid, but except for Israel. Because we're in a treaty with Israel. Well, you're the president. So how about you cancel this treaty? How about you cancel it? I don't know of anything that we benefit from Israel. But why not cut all foreign aid, including Israel? And we know why. It's because Trump is funded by the Israelis. Good news from Nick Fuentes. He has received a six-figure donation to his fundraiser. When he asked for money when he was in trouble with the criminal prosecution and the attempted assassination against him, he needed to relocate. He needed to be in a safe place. He needed security details. And someone donated a six-figure amount generously to him, an anonymous angel donor. Very good news. I'm happy to hear this. Very good news that there are people out there caring for our public personalities. And very often they don't demand any credit. They just help us do our work. That is absolutely fantastic. Majority of voters want less immigration, legally and illegally. I was looking at this graph. 38% want immigration levels decrease in 2016, 41% in 2023, 55% in 2024. We won. We won the argument. We won so hard. We changed the general normie public perception on immigration and race. That's how hard we won. Now, you may not know that we won because we've been hit by a lot of censorship and there's a lot of internet history that's getting erased. By the way, I'm extremely worried about the current state of censorship. I'm seeing shadow banning returning on X. I can see that certain of my favorite accounts that used to score 1 million impression, 2 million impression, people like Chief Trumpster or other gripers, they were having 1 million, 2 million impressions every day on one of their tweets. And now it's all below 10,000. I believe that Elon Musk has put heavily the foot back onto the brake pedal, and that he has allowed us to be free only for the purpose of winning the election. But that basically we are very close here to the old Twitter. We are very close where a couple of words that you can use, manifesto, shooter, immigration, illegal, all these words were punished in the old Twitter algorithm, and I believe they are currently being punished too. Furthermore, TikTok has been reborn. You know how they tried banning TikTok, but then TikTok came back under Trump within a day. But TikTok is back with one condition. Saying Palestine is free is now hate speech, and they are barring hate speech. It's very clear that whatever deal has been happening in the background is basically that TikTok must be more controlling of anti-Zionist voices and must be more swift in labeling them as hate speech, and therefore we are losing the whole pro-Gaza Palestine side of TikTok. This is very sad, and it's the continuation of the old internet censorship era. We're back to it. We're back to it, and Trump has been in office for a couple of days. So credits to Nick Fuentes, and I will take some credit too, because we both predicted this, that under Trump you will get more censorship, because it is under Trump that the censorship became its hardest. It's under Trump that they went after us. It's under Trump that Trump did nothing. It's under Trump that the COVID censorship was invented. Trump isn't pro-free speech. Trump is selling his interests to a bunch of foreign interests, and he's willing to transact. Rodi Lacid says, now, how can Elon deny it? Jan Carroll and Sam Hyde totally ratio him on this every time. Absolutely. It's very worrying because we have AI being set up in big ways in Silicon Valley. We have an Elon Musk who is wavering on free speech and is obviously interested in using X as some form of mind control. It's very worrying because I don't know that internet freedom will survive the next 4 years. That is extremely worrying. Shamrock Shake says they are fooling the normies with the deport vids of South Americans. Yeah, and it's very sad. They are building an Indian technocracy that has the explicit goal of controlling your mind and what you can think, that has AI wrapped all around your possible thoughts and pulling you by the strings where it wants you. And meanwhile, like, look at how based we are. There's two genders, and here's a Hispanic nanny yelling at the camera because she's getting deported. It's very worrying because as I was pointing out on the Richard Spencer show, the interview I did a couple of days ago, it's the same as communism. You know how they say we haven't done the true communism yet. That's why it didn't work. It wasn't enough communism, so that's why it didn't work. But we're doing this with brown people. We're saying the Hispanics were not the right brown people. First we said the blacks were not the right brown people. Then the Hispanics are not the right brown people. Now we're at the Indians. It's not going to be better. It's not going to be better because you wouldn't want to live in India and you wouldn't want to live in Mexico. For this simple reason, we do not improve our nation by changing its demographic constitution. Settle now and stop this ridiculous war. Trump threatens tariffs as Russia sees a small window for a deal on Ukraine. So here we have an opening for perhaps the end of the Ukraine war. Trump is saying to Vladimir Putin, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to harm your economy, but if you continue this war, I will have to put some heavy tariffs and taxes on everything that you do and everything that comes from Russia. I will say this is a very empty threat. Trump would be much stronger if he said, I'm going to strike Moscow with a nuclear weapon. But, you know, Putin is already under all sorts of sanctions. Trump cannot make it harder for Russia, really. Russia has developed its own system of resistance against these sanctions, and it does a lot of transactions with Southern Asia, and that's how they... So there's not much that Trump can do that really plagues Russia. But at the same time, I don't know that Vladimir Putin wants this war to be never-ending. I do believe that he wants an ending, but he's not going to give up anything around, you know, Crimea and this whole region around the body of water there. So I don't know that he's willing to give up what he has conquered. And yet we have a Zelensky who wants to return to 2022 borders. At some point, Trump is going to have to stop threatening Russia. And Trump, try this. Threaten Zelensky. Threaten Zelensky with the best threat you got, which is, I'm going to cut everything going to Ukraine. I mean, already we have some kind of a reduction of the arms delivery. We have seen that Trump has already altered some of the arms delivery. But if Trump was to go hard on Zelensky, that would fix the problem right now. You are aiming the wrong side, Trump, because no matter how much pressure there is on Putin to make a deal happen, he's faced with a deeply irrational man who has been farmed into irrationality. He's been rewarded constantly for being irrational, because this very irrationality is what allowed him to receive all this funding from the U.S., while maintaining the face of a quasi-war that looks like he's trying. That's all he has to do. He just has to look like he's trying. And he can cash in all of this foreign aid. So Trump, you're pushing on the wrong side. Push Zelensky and show him that you hold him by the balls and that he has to settle for whatever he can. Because it's totally unreasonable to demand the return to 2022 borders. You lost the war. When you lose a war, you lose territory. You don't get it back. Lendald Guntram says, as at some point Ukraine will collapse, not enough men remaining to be drafted. Every other military generation has less time to be trained properly. Russia is conquering those fortification lines faster than a year or two ago. Absolutely. And, you know, we could be in a situation where if Trump truly wants to dry out the support to Zelensky, that could put the situation such that Russia could advance even more. I'm sure Trump wouldn't let it happen without trying to get into the mix and trying to stop that. But the fact is, if Trump continues on having just the tools of withdrawing help, withdrawing foreign aid, not giving foreign aid, Ukraine is going to go dry. And when it's dry, Vladimir Putin could conquer a little more. Maybe everything up to the Dnieper River. I don't know if he wants to do this, if it matters to him at all. Yes, I have to go back to Naberius Super Chat. He says, JF, can you provide an explanation of Mike McCulloch's quantized inertia? Does it succeed over dark matter as a better explanation for the accelerated expansion of the universe? I'm not the man to do this, but I will try to the best of my knowledge, because this is what I do here. I try to do my best. I'm not a quantum physicist. So Mike McCulloch, great, and he will claim that, yes, this quantized inertia theory is is explaining the accelerated expansion of the universe, the dark matters. I don't know about the expansion of the universe, but certainly the dark matter, rotation of galaxy problem. This is a great idea. Let me try to... Man, I shouldn't be doing this because I actually don't know the details of this theory. I just think it's awesome. I'm fascinated by what he's pulling from it, and I'd like to hear more about it. But since you ask me, you put me on the spot, I have to create a drawing. So Mike Michalow's quantize the inertia. You have weight, okay? 1 pound. And let's say you have another weight, 10 pounds. Now, one of the most basic statements of physics is that despite anything to the contrary that you may think, these weights fall at exactly the same speed on planet Earth and on any gravitational environment. And the reason is the gravity is 10 times stronger onto 10 times more mass. 10x. 10x! And, but the mass also has another hidden component, which we call inertia. Inertia. Now, Mike Michalow's statement is that, hey, we never really had a physical explanation for inertia. Why are bigger things harder to move at all? And why do we have inertia? And inertia, of course, can be extended into moving things. And you have this idea that something that's moving at a certain speed will continue on that speed. If there's no friction, if it's in space, it will continue forever at that speed, which is also a reflection of inertia. So Mike Michalow is interested first at the fundamental level, if you forget about explaining the rotation of galaxy correctly, he's interested at, hey, how do I develop a concept of inertia within quantum physics? And this is where I have like 5% confidence in what I'm about to tell you because I don't fully understand it, but it goes with horizon. So Mike Michalow is saying, if you are a body here, there's the whole universe around you, stars, galaxies, all sorts of objects, the sun may be here, I don't know. But there's a universe around you. And, you know, do you know the concept of these little plates that can be so close that they compress the quantum world? You know, there's this this idea that if two plates are so close that they allow certain events from the virtual particles of the quantum world, such that more of them can occur outside, but less of them can occur inside, because there's just no place for this reaction to happen. The Casimir effect, that is it. Thank you, Doubting Thomas. So there's a Casimir effect where it's like there's not even a place for a full quantum oscillation because they are so close. Yet here there's plenty of place for all the virtual photons to be born and to annihilate themselves. And what you get is the Casimir effect is a force that if two things are so close as to block the quantum pressure from emerging from the vacuum, these plates will be attracted to each other. Here you have the Casimir effect. The Casimir effect is one of many forms of horizon thinking. you have the same in the case of the evaporation of a black hole, for example. So you have a black hole, you have the event horizon. If a particle pair shows up in the quantum noise of the universe, such that an antiphoton goes there, a photon goes there, and their direction happens to be that way and that way, you have a photon that has just escaped the event horizon of a black hole. And therefore, you have a loss of energy of the black hole. You have black hole evaporation, black hole, there's a term for it. I think it's evaporation or black hole, whatever. So horizon thinking is very solid in quantum physics because it has led to deep understanding of phenomena that you wouldn't have thought otherwise. You wouldn't have thought that a black hole can empty itself, can sweat away its mass. You wouldn't have thought that two plates on which there are no force applied, just from the fact of being close to each other, will attract each other further. And so, in a way, there is this thought. And, you know, the physics guy that I invited as a guest on this show, I don't remember, is Ray Fleming. Ray Fleming's statement is quite insane about these horizon thinking. He says it's the only thing we ever proved in physics. That is an important statement from Ray Fleming. He says it's the only theory that we thought of and that we then went into the world and saw it. And to him, the Casimir effect is one of the only natural forces out there. And in fact, he even goes as far as to claim that the strong nuclear force that ties the neutrons and the protons together is a Casimir effect of its own. A Casimir effect applying to small, small, small particles. This is all fascinating because, as it turns out, Mike McCullough is in astrophysics, is doing the same as what Ray Fleming is doing in quantum physics. He's saying, hey, this horizon thinking is fucking good. In fact, I think I can explain inertia and gravity with it. Here's how it goes from my understanding. Mike McCullough is saying you have, from the body that you are, you are seeing information flows from the universe. You are seeing mass. You are seeing non-mass. And the average distance with celestial objects varies. Because if you're very close to the sun here, there's only that distance between you and the sun. So your horizon here is blocked by an object. So you don't get to see this part of the universe. This part is obfuscated by the sun. Now, this is where I'm not totally sure, but I believe that what Mike McCullough is suggesting is that in this space, just like in the Casimir plate, there were more particles from the virtual photons popping outside of the Casimir plate than inside, so you had an inward pressure. What Mike McCullough is saying is there's less space here than here. There's less space here. There's more space here than there is here. There's more space here than there is here. And so what do you get? You get pressure that way, pressure that way, pressure that way, pressure that way. Essentially, you are being pushed toward the sun. Now, the genius, I believe, of Mike McCullough theory is that basically by invoking horizon thinking onto objects, he explains the mechanism by which inertia and gravity could arise. Maybe inertia and gravity didn't have to be there, but they are there because you are more distant from the other stars that are pushing you more, because there's more quantum pressure that way than on the sun. And it starts being important when you are a moving object. Suppose you're going that way at half the speed of light. Half the speed of light that way. Now, what you are seeing in front, you are getting closer and closer to every point in front at the speed of half the speed of light. Suppose there's a ray of light that goes that way. It's going to take a certain amount of time to get to you. Now, similarly, suppose there's a ray of light here or here. It's going to take a certain amount of time to get to you, but there is a point at which you simply will not see. So you have a horizon where the speed of light is not sufficient to get to you because you're advancing forward at half the speed of light. So again, Mike McCullough is saying this explains the inertia that is inherent to moving objects, where because you are blinded by this horizon, you don't see the universe behind you. You don't see these stars. And yet these stars, you see them. And he's saying the quantum pressure is such that invokes some virtual photon and antiphoton pair happening at the event horizon. It is such that you have more space here, more space here, more space here than you have between you and your horizon, your limit in terms of how you can perceive the universe. And because these lines are longer than these lines, you end up having a pressure that way, if I understand correctly. Although at this point, we're entering into the details of the theory that I don't know to this extent, but there is a disbalance of pressure in the quantum pairs produced based on how much distance, how big the universe is around you, and how big is your universe. And your universe is limited by horizon because you're moving in one way or another. Whatever is the way you're moving, in your back, behind you, you're missing parts of the universe. I love it. I love it because it's so fundamental. It kind of has to be true in a way. Like, it has to be true that the Anuru, the horizon as you advance, it has to be true in a way. The Anuru radiation exists. We have seen it. And so if it exists, for this, Mike McCullough is merely suggesting it should exist for that too. It should exist in our considerations of everything, including gravity, inertia, etc. It is solid. I can't believe that there's not more excitement around Mike McCullough's theory of quantized inertia. But so it is. Sometimes being right also means being alone. Much love, sleep well. And I'll see you all tomorrow.